time to tell me the truth, to burden your mouth for what you say, and pieces of paper in the way, 'cause I can't continue pretending to choose these opposite sides on which we fall, loving you later as if at all.
You are listening to Between the Lines, a monthly magazine show on the third Thursday of every month at 2 p.m. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper. Storytelling is an art form as old as the hills, or the caves, specifically the cave drawings in France. And it's as ubiquitous as weeds, as popular as ice cream, and as local as the Catskills and Rip Van Winkle, a creation, by the way, conjured up by Washington Irving, who'd never even been to the Catskills when he wrote the story from the comfort of his home in England. That's the theme of this month's show, storytelling, the universal, accessible, inclusive form of media that doesn't necessarily need to cost anything. It needs nothing to produce other than a pen and paper. And it is something for everyone, all ages and all nationalities. Every culture that exists has had a strong storytelling culture. Stories can be religious, mythical, or cultural. When we invent stories, we invent gods, heroes, villains, and magic. Where would we be without the stories of Shakespeare? My guest this month is a storyteller par excellence, Dina Burstein, a Catskill-based Argentinian-born artist and storyteller. And later on, in honour of Bloom's Day, which was earlier this week, we hear from another great storyteller, James Joyce. And there'll be a wee excerpt from Molly Bloom's soliloquy. So once again, this is Between the Lines on WGXC at 90.7 FM. So don't go anywhere. Here in the Open Studio, which is an art gallery, museum, and the home of Dina Burstein, an Argentinian-born, Catskill-based artist who lives here with her partner, artist Julie Chase. Dina's work in different media includes sculptures, ceramics, books, drawings, stories, and public art. It is an exotic, quirky, and whimsical mix of both the fabulous and the mundane, the practical and the esoteric. Northeast Journal of Antiques commented, "Dina offers a funky twist on art and philosophy," and the New York Times said her work contains an enchanting playfulness and said you were an artist of remarkable range, talent, and ability. Welcome to Between the Lines, Dina.
Thank you very much.
At the heart of much of Dina's work is not just the art part of it, but the storytelling part. And more specifically, Dina has created a series of so-called found objects that she calls artifacts, which is a combination of both physical art and the tall tales she has created about them.
Maybe I would like to start with the spoon. It's an old and rusty spoon.
Okay.
Lying in a back. Story of the spoon.
Okay, this is the story of an old and rusty spoon. Okay.
As soon as God claimed that he, by all himself, had created the whole universe and demanded endless praise and obedience, another God claimed that he, all by himself, had created the whole universe and demanded endless praise and obedience as well. And then another God claimed the same copyright, and then another. The world started to be chipped away by the warring gods, and just before it was all lost, a brave spoon scooped the rain, lake, seed, soup, song, fire, people, fish, kite, needles, turtle, and night. Some claim that the spoon was the only authentic creator and savior of the universe. Temples were erected in her honor, rituals performed, sacrifices made, but she didn't care for any of it. She became a hobo, traveling light, in cargo trains, crossing borders, bridges, tolls, checkpoints, without ticket, papers, or money. Occasionally, she stopped in a town near the rails to rest, rust, and dream. But before long, she will be gone again.
So now this is a spoon in a box. Describe it a little bit and how it came about.
Well, most of the artifacts are started with something that I find. Usually by the river, by the Hudson River. And this actually, I did find that by the river. And I keep it on a shelf till I hear a story that the object had to tell me. And this was the story that this spoon told me.
Let's go on the next one.
This is a fork lying in a velvet case. This fork was part of an extensive set of silverware owned by the Thomas Cole household, the father of the Hudson River School of Painting. It was lost to the family during a stormy picnic, family conflicts, on a now famous spot, circa the summer of 1837. The family lost a fork, but the fork found its freedom, and it has been living a life of leisure since then. It gracefully accepted to be in display here.
I love that. That's one of my favorite ones. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's do another.
This is put together like a piece of bark with the head, which is made of metal, probably was part of a machine, but it looks like, you can see, looks like like a face. And this is the story of this one. This piece, probably a self-portrait, was made by the first outsider artist there ever was. She was definitely outside art and history and still is. In spite of this, she acquired many disciples. Knowing that most people are biased against art, she would dress as a ghost and pound on the windows of her neighbors while howling, "You must create!" And many did so. Some claim that her spirit never died and that she still haunts normal citizens, now as a genuine ghost, and commands them to create or else. It is rumored that her name was Afuera Feral, that she never made any money, and lived in a hut in the forest.
You have to do this one more. The Hemingway tangle recently found in Cuba.
Well, it's a tangle. It's like a fishing hook and some fishing line all tangled together that I found in Cuba. And it's in the Cuban cigar box.
Right, yes, I keep pointing that out, yeah. Very appropriate. So how many of these do you have in total?
I've lost count. There are about 50 or something. I keep making them.
When did you start and how did it come about?
Came about with... Actually, it was a scissor that I found some years ago, just before I moved to Catskill. I was in Peekskill. And the scissor told me a story. And then I just kept it for a long time. And then I was making the artifact with now knowing the stories that finally started to come together.
They spoke to you.
Exactly, exactly.
And what are you trying to say here? What are you influenced by when you do these, when you create these artifacts?
Well, I'm influenced by how relative everything that we know is, like history and anthropology, and we read in texts and museums, and this is that and that, and sometimes it's not that at all, and sometimes exactly between the lines, the real story. So I'm trying to find out what the real story is in terms of poetic terms, or even the possibility of seeing things differently instead of taking things for granted.
Mm-hmm. And are they purely works of art? I mean, do you try, are they just here on display, or are you selling them?
I haven't been selling them. I wanted to keep them together as a collection. I have like a show at one point, but they're growing a lot, so I might be considering selling some of them, or maybe making a duplicate, like a museum store.
And they have been on exhibit in other museums, right?
Yeah, particularly in the Woodstock Artists Association Museum, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is just one of many kinds of work that you create here. And all of them, it seems to me, have some sort of a story attached to them. So why don't you just walk me through some of the other things that you do, or is there more that you want to say about this?
Well, they are all over the place. So... this is a little different, but another one is hard to describe. This is the channel of the unconscious.
Okay. Now, this looks to me like an old television set.
It is. So, and it had an optical illusion. In the radio, you won't be able to catch it, so let's move on.
Okay. So some things you need to be here for.
Exactly.
Just take my word for it. Now, you have these great sculptures, and many of them have faces. What's the significance of that?
Well, actually, this is a gargoyle. I did years ago like a project called Gargoyle to Scare Developers. And when we moved here, I said we needed to protect, the green spaces. So it's called Upstate Gargoyle to protect the nature and the village and everything. And I'm influenced by tribal cultures and pre-Columbian cultures. So it's and the city and... everything comes together somehow, like from all different parts of the world. So Native American art and all these different tribes, Inuit art, I'm very inspired by that. And also by literature and storytelling, so I kind of combine, visualize what I read. And...
right. To what extent does Argentina still influence your work? Do you go back there?
Yeah, I go back very often. Actually, it's a kind of imagination that is there that sparked me somehow. Like I see things in the street, in craft and even in art centers that I say, "Oh my God, this is so creative, so interesting," and it's some way it's hard to describe. It's the imagination, it's the type of imagination that is there.
Because, as you pointed out, it is radio. It's really hard to do justice to so many of these pieces. So we're going to have to just work on the listener's imagination here a bit with a bit of description from you.
This is like a stone that has been looks like carved. So, and it has a picture of the Catskill Creek. This text is, "The Catskill Creek carved this stone with its own tongue, found in 2006 in the canoe expedition." All this correct. It's the truth. The stone was a celebrity in her time, circa the Stone Age. While her contemporaries had mastered the ability to speak, she alone could sing, and she did, deep and long, for a few eons. Eons? Until one day...
eons. Eons. That's pretty close. Eons.
Until one day, without warning, she stopped. She has remained silent since then. Nobody knows why.
And what else do we have here?
Here... This is one of the most recent ones. In 1999, this is
Nest. Right, it's a nest with a stone in it. Was it supposed to be an egg? It's supposed to be an egg,
no,
right?
No, you have to explain. This is explanation.
Okay.
In 1999, it was reported by the press that Roy and Silo, two male chimp penguins in New York Central Park Zoo, were performing behavior typically seen in penguin couples. They made a nest together and seemed to be trying to hatch a rat that resembled an egg. Since then, scientists in the field had found rats in nests and concluded that many rats feel compelled to occupy empty nests in the hope of being adopted by the same couple of any avian species.
Oh, isn't that cute? Now, look, I have to tell you, I have two favorite stories. And one is about the bed bugs worshipping their god.
So. Yeah, right.
You want to explain that one?
Yeah, this one is here, actually. That's funny, put it on Facebook and usually get a lot of hits, but not for this one. People are scared, I guess. It's this creature that I got. This actually, somebody gave it to me. I'm not sure what it is, but it looks creepy.
Yeah.
And it's in like in a silver box full of pins, silver rusted pins on a piece of velvet.
Mm-hmm.
The text, this is the interpreted text. This is one of the many deities worshipped by bedbugs in North America. This specimen, believed to be a minor god, was found under an antique quilt in a manor in the Hudson Valley.
Okay, lovely story, lovely. So, Dina, what is this? Is this part of an art movement? Does it have a name? Or is this a new trend? Or what exactly is this, do you think?
I just kind of started, like most of the stuff I do. I mean, I'm sure I'm influenced by everything like everybody else, but I just started to do it. And I call it the archaeological museum. And it keeps happening. And it's sort of a synthesis, I think. I started, before I did art, I was writing. I studied literature. So, and it's a way to combine everything my reading, my questioning of stuff, and the object is like, I find it very pleasing to combine all these different elements and let it happen also.
What do you want people to take away from this? What do you want their reaction to be?
Well, it's been very interesting to be here in Catskill and have all these different kind of people there. A lot of people get it and laugh and cry, and some people said, oh my God, this is very valuable, this fork, how you got it, you know? And then it's like, this stone, it must be really old. I say, yes, yeah, really old, because it's true. And people say, how you know that? Well, I just, you know, found stuff in there. They tell me the story, so why not, you know? And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, the people's reaction. And some people connect to some artifacts more than the others. And usually people start very, when I watch them, they read very seriously. And then they start kind of to smile and say, oh!
Then they get it.
Yeah.
So who's to say that these stories are not true?
Exactly. That's my point.
Especially looking at Catskill's history. I mean, it's a perfect place to make this kind of art.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much to say about different things. And sometimes stuff that haven't been said. Like, I don't know, this is a kind of long, but Amos Eaton, that was an early scientist and living in Catskill.
This one is true, right? He's an actual person?
Yeah, no, sure, he's an actual person. Like Thomas Cole is an actual person.
yeah, but that's not his fork, though.
Right. And this is like, well, it's true to some extent. Everything that I found fascinating is his history, that he was put in jail unfairly, and then became like a famous geologist and talked to the...
He was an innocent victim of a Catskill landowner who sold him some land and later, regretting it, accused Eaton of forgery, when in fact Pendleton himself was the forger and Eaton was sent to jail.
Yeah, and I read that is actually somebody pointed to me because I thought I would like the story. This is like the Hudson Tom Lewis. It's a real story. And then I connected to the actual stones. He was an early geologist. So their stones are from the Catskill Creek. So probably he collected the stones.
So it's a true story. He probably did collect those stones.
Yeah, right, from the creek. And look at this. They're wild stones, like, you know, look like eggs. And this is like full of fossils. Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Okay, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Between the Lines. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper, and I'm here with Dina Burstein, who is a Catskill artist and runs with her partner Julie Chase the Open Studio in Catskill. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
You are here with Anne Forbes Cooper. This is Between the Lines. And I'm here with Dina Burstein, who is the owner, founder of the Open Studio in Catskill. And we're talking about some of her found artifacts that she creates here. But we're just going to take a leap here across several oceans into another continent, to the continent of South America, which is where you're from. Just tell me a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I grew up in a place called Mendoza, a small city. I went to school.
In Argentina, right?
Argentina, yeah, yeah. I studied literature, as I said before, and I came early in my 20s to New York City.
Now, but what were your family's origins? Didn't they come from Europe?
Well, they were Jews, Eastern European Jews, both sides, yeah. So they were immigrants themselves, too.
And what did your parents do?
Well, my parents do? Well, my father was like a worker in the credit union, and my mother was a social worker. But they both were very curious people and readers, and they love art and music and storytelling.
And storytelling, right. So you grew up with books. Mm-hmm. And in Argentina, who were you influenced by? Borges?
Oh, Borges is a big influence, yeah. Borges is a good influence, yeah. Yeah, mostly literature. I didn't see that much art growing up. So, yeah, yeah.
And so, and you came to the States when?
1976.
Why?
Well, many reasons, but the main one is the military dictatorships. It was impossible to live there. It was really there. It was, yeah, a lot of people left if they couldn't do it. There were many different people, Videla, Biglione. They were from 76, actually before 76, from 1970 to 1980-something, for my there were one dictator after the next. I mean, the same grave, the same people, the same criminals, actually. I have no problem. Yeah, the criminals. They make people, quote-unquote, disappear.
Right.
Right. So it was a really tough time, really tough time.
And what about Evita Perón? What did you think of her?
I'd rather not talk.
Okay, cut.
I mean, here it's okay, but then Argentina comes to my head if I say, you know. I think...
What, they'll come after you?
No, it's like so heated. Well...
You know, okay.
And nothing is black and white, so nothing people, right. So Evita Perón, they were like, actually some of the palaces were great for it, you know, but they were, you know, they had this dictator style and they were, whatever. That's another discussion. I'm not sure.
Another discussion. Okay, but I have to ask you this. Did you go and see it in the theater?
No.
Evita?
No, hate to do that. And so many people say, when they say, don't cry for me, Argentina. I say, cry for me.
I guess you hate that song, dear.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I will not play it during this segment. Did you come by yourself or with your family?
My family was already here. So it was kind of very, it was good. Yeah, that's what I, you know, could get to come here. Yeah. Even though it was illegal.
I was okay. Wait, are you still an illegal immigrant?
No. Otherwise, I wouldn't say it.
So you came, you all arrived in the Bronx. Well,
no, I arrived in Manhattan, actually. Okay. I mean, it took me a while to get, you know, yeah, Manhattan. First of all, the Lower East Side, and then the Upper West Side.
Mm-hmm. And what were you doing?
Art, most of the time, and teaching, and did a lot of different stuff. Mm-hmm. Like whatever, just to make money.
And you started off as a writer, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, it was hard to come here, and my English was terrible, and so I needed to, you know, communicate something, so just by chance, I started working with clay, and it became, like, cool. Leave it. That's
and it spoke to you.
Yeah, I just couldn't stop working. I had to quit my teaching job in order to just do clay.
And so how did you end up in Catskill?
After like so many years in the city, I wanted to get out. I always loved nature. So I would come to this area often to hike and canoe trips and camping, so I knew this area. And so when I met Julie, first of all, we tried Peekskill for a while. They have an artist program for Loft, and then we said, okay, we can live without the city. So keep the traveling till we found this place, and it was perfect because it was everything we needed, a lot of space for working and showing and living.
And you came here in 2004, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So what was Catskill like in 2004?
Felt like full of promise, but nothing was going on yet. I mean, it was kind of in transition, so wasn't sure. We didn't think too much about it. Said, this is a good building, we want to get out, let's try it, and that's it. And then the open studio came about from the idea that, I was living in Manhattan, I had at one point I had my studio in my tenement building and the apartment I was renting. And I had so many work that I just couldn't move. And then a friend said, you do an open studio. So invite people, get the flyer, and then sell work for the holidays or whatever. And it was a complete success. And I kept doing it for years and years. So I said, well, maybe I can do this like a permanent open studio. So this gallery is an extension of my studio and Julie's in a way. That's what we call it, open studio.
Yeah. And at one time, I guess about 2008, the street was lined with art galleries. Well, there were a lot there. I remember counting, there was about 13 art galleries at one point.
That was amazing. We had some amazing. It was great. And we coordinated our openings together, and there was such a crowd. It was great. And then little by little, people started to leave, unfortunately.
Yeah, the economy tanked. And Catskill was hit pretty badly. So what made you, did you ever think of leaving? I mean, how was it for you guys?
Well, it was lonely. What can I tell you? It was sometimes when you go to the street, nobody in the street.
Where is everybody?
The Arts Council is open, and the pizza place, and us, and that's it. And the liquor store.
The liquor store, that's all you need. That's all you need, really. Pizza, liquor, and, you know, some art.
So it was very lonely, and I don't know. So this is our home, this is all combined, so we didn't think of leaving. It was like, okay. And yeah, I don't know, being an artist, we've been up and down in my life. I've seen a lot of work somehow, so just okay, you know, piece it together and teach classes and keep working and hope that, you know, things will improve.
Lo and behold, things are improving. Things yes. are improving.
Yeah, and I love these people who are coming with this creative ideas and working with their hands, like, you know, they're making books or theater, all these creative projects. I love it.
So hopefully we will get some of the old flavor of Catskill back again.
More traffic and people starting to come back. And yeah, people haven't seen in years. Oh, you're still here. Yes. you haven't been here.
So hopefully there'll be lots of open studio type places. But let me ask you this, to just get back to your art. In terms of the kind of art that you do, where do you see yourself in the overall kind of universe of artists? Where do you fit in? What do you want to happen at this point?
Well, that's a hard question. Well, I don't know how to fit myself because nobody, that's not my problem. And I don't fit in the box. I don't know. I just kind of, I don't know. It'd be nice to have, I've been trying sort of to create, catalog of my work and preserve, because I have so much of it that trying kind of and spread it around and have in different places so that people can enjoy them, yeah.
And it should be mentioned, of course, you do a lot of public art, too. For example, the sundial down at the Point, which I actually helped with. I came along one day and was under your instruction to put in some mosaic.
Yes. That was fun. I did that, and I did some other work in the city for the MTA and the school, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm doing a public art in our building next. I have made ceramic panels I want to put on the outside, on the wall, on the facade of the building.
Oh, great. Okay. Now, just to get back a little bit to the storytelling, you've kind of come full circle, right? You started off as a writer, then you moved into art, and now you're back writing again because you write children's books, and you have a publishing house here, right?
Well, yes, a Potato Spirit Emergency Press.
Okay. So what exactly is that?
I've been printing my own books for a long time. First of all, it was with the copy machines and stapling and putting together. I did my own. I did a lot of one-of-a-kind books, which I love to do, but the beauty for me about books is that it's democratic, that, you know, for you can let them go and for free or for $4 or $5, you can get it, you know. So once in a while, I've been printing my own books with color or with black and white, and now with the different ways. Now I did some with the print on demand that I sent to the publication, you know. So all different kinds of things. The Potato Spirit Emergency Press.
The children's book you did, what was that about again?
It's The Land of the Lost Things.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's published by the Arte Publico Press from the University of Houston. Well, I have a lot of children's stories that are waiting for publication. I'm glad that came out. Yeah, yeah. And it's about the imagination, losing and finding and making do. And
so it's kind of a literary version of your art here.
Yeah, it's also about art making. The book is also about art making.
So you're kind of firing on all cylinders here. You're anything else that we haven't mentioned?
Well, I feel like years back when people said that you're doing ceramic, stick with ceramic, don't do something else, don't start painting now, right? And I said, why not? You know, it was kind of the more, the better. I like to explore all different medias. And
yeah, I mean, well, I always found that you do one thing and it feeds another. I mean, writing feeds the art, and then the art will feed the ceramics, and then the ceramics will feed the painting. And
yeah, it's also good to be with Julie Chase, that she works with fabrics and photograph with different, but also kind of mm-hmm. inspire each other, and sometimes mm-hmm. we collaborate. And it's...
You've had some terrific press. What ideally would you like to happen? Would you like to be sort of discovered again? And
yes, I'd love to be discovered again. I'd like to be discovered again, of course. Keep working. You know, I was on the cards when I was growing up that I was going to be an artist and move here. And there were so many obstacles. And here I am and in a beautiful village and keep doing new stuff. So I'm very happy about that. But yeah, it wouldn't hurt at all to be discovered and be in museums and be collected, and etc. But actually, also have to say that, you know, I do have people who they are supporters, and that's what keeps me going. I only have some little group of people, not all just the same people by no means, but they keep coming back and buying my work and inquiring what I'm doing, and that's been a big help.
So, Dina Burstein, I just want to thank you so much for being on Between the Lines.
Thank you, Anne.
And we're now going to leap across another ocean to Dublin. That would be Dublin, Ireland, not Dublin, Ohio, or wherever it is. So please stay listening. And we will be right back.
was in a merry month of June. From me home I started, let the girls in tune. Nearly broken hearted, saluted, batted there. Kissed me down and mother, drank a pint of beer. Me gave the tears, the sweater enough to reap the corn. They were Irish born, cut the stub like down to be Anish goes. Dublin's brand new pair of blows, rattle all the bugs, fighting all the dogs on the rocky road. The Dublin ones are great for vile, and the air is turning down the rocky road. And all the ways of Dublin work for how we die. And my linger to die, the rest of turn weary, left the very next turn, feeling frightened. There he had a drop in a pure, beat me down for sinking, that's the penny's pure. When air is down to drink, you see the lassie smile. But all the while, at me curious star was such a bird. The Dublin and asked me, was I hard? Why does I reply till I was sick and tired of the rocky road? The Dublin ones are great for fire. Hunt the hares, turn it down the rocky road. And all the ways the Dublin walk fell out of town. In Dublin next to ride, I thought it's such a pity to be so soon deprived of you. That front city when I took a stroll. All among the quality bundle it was stolen. But they did penalty something just in mind. When I looked behind the bundle, could I find upon the stick? However, the last told me can it grow, what's the much involved on the rocky road? The Dublin ones are great for fire. Hunt the hares, turn it down the rocky road. And all the ways the Dublin went well out of that. From there I got away, me skirts never failed. And landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing. Captain at me roared, let no more of Paddy. When I jumped up for the cabin of ground from Paddy down among the flakes, there's some early rigs, there's some early chips to ward. Around me Dublin went up on the head, wished that I was dead. I went to bury stead on the rocky road. Dublin wants a great fire. Hunt the hares, turn it down the rocky road. And all the ways of Dublin went well out of town. The boys of Liverpool, when I safely landed, called myself a fool. I could no longer stand it, blood began to boil. Temper I was losing, dear old Aerodile. Lay the gang of years around me, so society lay in the end of fight. Galway boys of Venice all went to Dublin with a louder right. Joining me in fight, help me clear the way. For the rocky road, Dublin wants a great fire. Hunt the hares, turn it down the rocky road.
And it's usually about this time that I have a conversation with my good friend, the psychotherapist, social commentator, man about Athens, or as he likes to be referred to, a human being, John McInerney. But he's off on a boondoggle, fact-finding mission to Dublin, celebrating Bloomsday, which was this Monday, June 16th, the annual celebration of the life of James Joyce and his novel Ulysses. And this is also usually the time of year that John and I get together with a few others to have our own Bloomsday reading in Athens. So in lieu of that, I'm just going to read a wee bit of Molly Bloom's soliloquy. So here goes. I love flowers. Oh, I'd love to have the whole place swimming in roses. God of heaven, there's nothing like nature. The wild mountains, then the sea and waves rushing, then the beautiful country with fields of oats and wheat and all kinds of things, and all the fine cattle going about that would do your heart good, to see rivers and lakes and flowers, all sorts of shapes and smells and colours springing up, even out of the ditches, primroses and violets. Nature it is. As for them saying there's no God, I wouldn't give a snap of my two fingers for all their learning. Why don't they go and create something? I often asked him. Atheists, or whatever they call themselves, go and wash the cobbles off themselves first. Then they go howling for the priest, and they dying. And why? Why? Because they're afraid of hell on account of their bad conscience? Ah, yes, I know them well. Who was the first person in the universe before there was anybody that made it all?
Ah, that they don't know.
Neither do I. So there you are. They might as well try to stop the sun from rising tomorrow.
The sun shines for you, he said. The day we were lying among the rhododendrons and Howth Head in the grey tweed suit and his straw hat. The day I got him to propose to me. Yes. My God, after that long kiss, I near lost my breath. Yes, he said, was a flower of the mountain.
Yes,
So we are all flowers, all a woman's body. Yes, that was one true thing he said in his life. And the sun shines for you today. Yes, that was why I liked him. Because I saw he understood or felt what a woman is. And I knew I could always get round him. And I gave him all the pleasure I could, leading him on till he asked me to say yes. And I wouldn't answer first, only looked out over the sea and the sky. I was thinking of so many things he didn't know of, Mulvey and Mr. Stanhope and Hester and Father and old Captain Groves and the sailors playing All the Birds Fly. And I say stoop and washing up dishes, they called it on the pier, and the sentry in front of the governor's house with a thing around his white helmet, poor devil, half roasted, and the Spanish girls laughing in their shawls and their tall combs, and the auctions in the morning with the Greeks and the Jews and the Arabs and the devil knows who else from all the ends of Europe, and Duke Street and the foul markets, all clucking outside Larby Sharon's, and the poor donkeys slipping half asleep, and the vague fellows in the cloaks asleep in the shade on the steps. And the big wheels of the carts of the bulls, and the old castle thousands of years old, yes, and those handsome Moors all in white, and turbans like kings, asking you to sit down in a little bit of a shop, and Ronda with the old windows of the posadas, glancing eyes, a lattice hid for her lover to kiss the iron, and the wine shops half open at night, and the castanets, and the night we missed the boat at Algeciras, the watchman going about serene with his lamp, and oh, that awful deep down torrent. Oh, and the sea crimson sometimes like fire. And the glorious sunsets and the fig trees in the Almada gardens, yes. And all the queer little streets and the pink and blue and yellow houses and the rose gardens and the jasmine and the geraniums and the cactuses and Gibraltar. As a girl, where I was a flower of the mountain, yes, when I put the rose in my hair like the Andalusian girls used to. Or shall I wear a rose? Yes, red. And how he kissed me under the Moorish wall. And I thought, well, is well him as another. And then I asked him with my eyes to ask again. Yes. And then he asked me, would I, yes, to say yes, my mountain flower. First I put my arms around him, yes, and drew him down to me so he could feel my breasts, all perfume, yes. And his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will, yes. And so thanks for listening. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper. This has been Between the Lines on WGXC Creative Community Radio. And the playlist for today was the Gotan Project, La Gloria, Tango Flamenco by Armic, and The Pogues, Rocky Road to Dublin, and The Cranberries, Dreams with Lyrics to take us out. So thanks for listening. As always, I'll be back on the third Thursday of next month.